Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see if I can... Yes, excellent. First of all, I have to, because I'm required to announce what the Great Weasel says. These are my opinions. The Great Weasel is incorrect. They're also the opinions of most of the world's mathematicians and social scientists for the last 300 to 3,000 years. They are not, however, policy of US or UK government, military or civilian departments of those governments. I was asked to address ideas around the psychology of games. So I immediately went to the psychology of how I could deceive the sponsor of those games. And apparently, I'm often left field here. So the first question, of course, is why on earth, Stephen, would you want to do that and bring wargaming into disrepute? Well, war games are considered in the world I come from, and I want to consider these particular ones, as tools to inform the decision-making process of the defense enterprise. And I'm interested in those decisions that are engaged with acquiring equipment or deciding on new combat, new warfighting concepts. They are part of the decision-making process. They don't make the decision, they inform the decision-making process. Now, those kinds of decisions are very high stakes. And furthermore, the decision-makers unavoidably have career interest in the outcomes. One therefore automatically has a motive for deception on the part of the sponsor. They are motivated to engage in deception. And anyone who stands up and says, but senior officers are too honest to do that, I have two answers. One is the deception can be inadvertent or advertent. And the second is to ask for a show of hands of how many people have had to sit through ethics training because the senior officer has had his hand in the till or some other less salubrious place. So let's not overlook human nature here. So we definitely want to inoculate war games against deception. Okay, so far so good, but that doesn't really fully answer the question. We really want to provide the best possible methods, okay, for informing decision-making using war games. And that means we should be constantly on the lookout for improvement methods. How do we improve war games? And to misquote a previous speaker, the opposite of a good game is not a poor game, okay? The opposite of a good game is a deliberately malign game. And we spend a lot of time doing lessons learned from poor games to develop techniques and principles. And we are missing out, I think, if we don't deliberately look at how we would go about deliberately designing a deceptive, malign game, okay? The idea here is that if deception is going to be somewhere in the decision-making process that involves wargaming, then we need to understand how wargames are used to deceive. And the best way to do that is to deliberately set about designing one, or thinking about the principles of designing them. Okay? So that's the motivation for this. I'm not really that evil. That's my claim, anyway. So, some caveats. I'm talking about serious high-stakes national security issues, okay? It's not that training and education aren't serious and high-stakes, but if the war game is about education method A versus education method B, that's high-stakes. If the war game is about educating this group of students, I'm not particularly interested in that area. I'm interested in novel and future environments. Not wargaming, well-understood tactical interactions whose particular outcome in this particular situation might be unknown until you've gamed it or experimented, etc. An example is information operations during limited nuclear war between India and Pakistan. Show me the combat results table for that. Show me the statistics. Show me anyone who can stand up and says, I know how to adjudicate that game, and I'll show you a liar or an idiot. Okay? I'm not talking about benign deception of players, the hidden scenario idea, where you deliberately hide the nature of the scenario, because in history it's so well known, the students would immediately jump to some sort of solution. You want to drive them through that. and there's a bunch of examples referenced in the paper. By sponsor, by the way, I refer to other stakeholders as well. I'm not distinguishing between different roles in a wargaming organization. It's either an external organization that's delivering wargames to a sponsor, or it's a wargaming organization within the sponsor's own organization. And neither am I talking about wargaming, red versus blue, and blue versus red deception that would occur on the battlefield. I'm specifically addressing how one can malignly develop a war game to deceive the decision-making process that that game is meant to inform. Two simultaneous approaches. You can deceive the sponsor or other stakeholders directly during the game design process, the game development process, and post-game analysis. And secondly, you can address deceiving the sponsor and other stakeholders by deceiving the players, by nudging them along a certain route to come up with an answer that is the preferred answer rather than the one that an honest war game would create, and doing so in a way that's undetectable. In fact, what the deception planner wants is to be patted on the back and told what a wonderful, objective, honest game it was. Okay? And again, in answer to the people who say, well, that would never happen, why would you do that? I've sat and listened to a two-star officer from a service that remained nameless to protect the guilty, directly ordering his players to make no decision that could possibly count against that service's preferred solution. It was a game addressing two alternate concepts. Now, the game designer had designed the game to spot that kind of behavior and deal with it very nicely. Nevertheless, my point is the motive and the action for deception at senior officer level was quite clear. I have been directly ordered not to engage in any research or gaming that might impugn the correctness of a major replacement program. Okay? Because, and we'll come to this later, senior officers believe they know the right answer independent of analysis. Okay? And we have to deal with that, but we can exploit it. We can exploit that. So there is a number of ways of addressing the external, what I call the outer game, how to deceive the sponsor, and they deal with stress, stress and deception. The stress and deception literature is quite clear on this. If you have a spectrum, high-stressed people, not enough time to make a decision, but they have to make a decision, overwhelmed with information. Okay, these people are rigid. Okay, they don't have enough time to actually think, and they tend to focus on information that agrees with their predispositions. Okay, they want to reduce the emotional stress. Relaxed targets, on the other hand, they are not under the gun to make a decision. They have oodles of time to think. Those two are actually the harder people to deceive. It may be that their predispositions fit your deception plan, in which case, good, just enhance the stress on the stressed people, just keep the other guys nice, fat and happy, okay? If they do not, if their predispositions do not agree with your deception plan, if you're talking about stressed, rigid sponsors, you somehow, and by the way, red word players on the bottom right should be stakeholders. Then you have to increase or decrease the project tempo. Okay, you send down to talk to the action officer, someone who's senior to them, and you increase the timetable. We have additional stuff coming online from more senior officers. We need to pull your game forward. You flood them with detailed and accurate information every time they ask for anything about the game. You just keep them stressed. You increase the stress, or you do the opposite. Vigilance targets. These are targets in the deception literature, and these are deception literature terms. They're stressed to make a decision, but they have time to think, okay? They are, in fact, easier to deceive. because you have time to interfere with their cognitive functions. You have time to interfere with their predispositions, and we'll talk about how to do that. There you just maintain the project tempo. So we'll talk a little bit about stressing the target in a few moments. So directly deceive the sponsor, and by the way, stress the players. Play with the stress and the game tempo. This is a dual use slide here. Play with the game tempo on the players. Overconfidence, I've mentioned that earlier. Stakeholders in serious decision making tend to be senior people. They tend to be senior because they've been successful in the past. And again, the social science and psychology research here is clear. They tend to overemphasize in their own minds the effect of their competence on their past success and de-emphasize the effect of luck. No one likes to believe that they were successful because of luck instead of their wonderful, powerful brain, okay? Now, these are good people. They have clearly been competent in the past, but they tend to underestimate the effect of luck. They tend to blur the line between what they can and can't control. And one only has to look at the behavior of certain highly successful, well-decorated military officers and ask, why on earth did they do that? And a good answer is they thought they could control the outcome, the people involved, that it wouldn't come out. And yet, there's a famous person whose name I forget said, only have an affair with someone who has more to lose than you do. Okay? Most of these people have a lot less to lose than these generals, and it's sheer luck whether they blab to the press or not. And they have underestimated the effect of luck on their past performance. And this can be exploited. They are, furthermore, so they're over-optimistic, overconfident, and they blur the line, and they often already believe they know the answer. After all, we promote officers who are emphatic, make fast decisions, can lead, and that's what you exploit. I used to do karate, and I loved it when a brown belt came at me. I only had a white belt. I'd scuttle backwards, and when his forward momentum was high enough, come smashing right back, fist in the face. His own head, you know, just basically did the punch. People's beliefs are robust, even under contradictory information. When your belief is core to your sense of community, and most military decision makers belong to a community, when your beliefs are core to your sense of community, then there is a tendency, a majority tendency, to harden that belief when two conditions hold. One, you receive contradictory information, but secondly, you yourself acknowledge the validity of that contradictory information, a highly counterintuitive result. Most people believe two things about this. One, that it's true, and second, that they themselves are the outlier about whom it's not true. They are mostly correct on the first, and most of them are incorrect on the second. Okay? So what do? You provide the vigilant target with deliberately blurred or ambiguous initial information. You do not go in all clear. You go in a little fumble-footed. He thinks you're just not being terribly effective. He just thinks you're not being terribly effective, maybe. But you want to set up this initial picture, okay? That initial picture, when you study the psychology, will interfere with their ability to absorb later, more accurate, more correct information, and you exploit this. We'll talk about how you get around that. So you set up the initial scenario to be ambiguous, includes your desired conclusions. You then respond to the player or the stakeholder, if you're talking about the outer game, if it's the player, the inner game, with massive amounts of tailored tactical information that hides the correct information. None of it's a lie, you completely stick to the truth. We ran a game, two blue, one red, for one blue, every time they asked for any information, we answered it. And they just spiraled down to asking more and more tactical information to help them make the decision. And the other team, we just went all vague on them. Intel networks are down. I'll get back to you on that. Oh, it's a battalion. And it was the guys who did not have all that plethora of tactical information who did far better on every measure of performance for that game. Surplus information, it results in reduced accuracy of the conclusion and overconfidence in that conclusion, especially if you're an alpha male senior military officer. So we can use that. Career pressure, let's take a look at that. Stakeholders, I've already mentioned, have career interest in the outcomes of their decisions and are under pressure from their community. You think the officers playing the game that were told you will not make a decision that contradicts the general's already preconceived notion weren't under career pressure? Think again. The University of California, Provost, I think it was, did a study of intellectual fraud and identified three factors that were usually present. The perpetrators were under career pressure. We've already covered that. Stakeholders in war games are under career pressure, especially if the game is informing an important decision. The perpetrators thought they already knew the answer, didn't really have to do the experiment or the study. You could just, do it to pad the resume, if you like. Do it to confirm your answer. You already know the answer. Senior officers in these kinds of high-stakes conditions, I believe that many of them believe they already know the answer. And the experiments are not expected to be precisely reproducible. Dude, war games, precisely reproducible? I think not. The three risk factors are present for fraudulent decision-making around games that are designed to inform high-stakes military decisions. Already covered that leads us to those three methods of dealing with this. New information is assimilated, however, so feed them bad information. Mindsets are quick to change, to form, but resistant to change. Set up, make sure the initial going in picture is highly well designed to be what you want it to be. And understand your stakeholder. They will see what they expect to perceive. Okay. As far as players are concerned, we can go one further. We talked about cheating yesterday. By cheating, I do not mean spotting that you could use cell phones, but no one told you you could, like in yesterday's game. Okay. I do not mean finding an inadvertent flaw in the game design rules and exploiting it. You want cheaters in the game. This is a double-edged sword. Cheaters will beat your game design up, help you improve it, and they'll come up with all sorts of innovative ways of getting around the problem. I'm talking about the people who wish, are motivated to win, and deliberately break the rules, okay, that are obviously set up to enable a game. Okay, so you design into your game loopholes. If it's quite clear red and blue aren't going to be holding secret talks, you put them in the room next to each other. Okay. Preferably the room next to each other with the toilet between them, because guess what's going to happen? You design it deliberately like that, you detect and monitor it, and you're the adjudicator. So you design an inductive vice a deductive game, because it's a lot easier now to nudge the adjudication down a route that you want it to go down, especially if you're monitoring and spotting the cheating behavior. It's then easier for the game analysis to imply the deceptive result, especially if the people you're talking to really like these pseudo-arithmetic methods of selecting decisions and doing analysis. You can drive a truck through those, and that's a whole different topic. I call it puppet mastery. It's vitally important that you don't leave your fingerprints over all of this. It's a wise deception planner that builds into the plan the plan to basically divert blame onto somebody else. Okay? You want the cheaters there because you can blame them. You want the initial scenario to be ambiguous in a way that is hidden unless you draw attention to it. Oh, dearie me. No, this wasn't deception, sir. Look, I mean, we all agreed on this initial scenario. Gosh, look, it could have been interpreted that way. no harm, no foul. And so one has all these different things coming together here. And not to be outdone in the worst war game diagram ever. Yes, of course you can read it at the back there. That brings it all together and it's on the web. It's on the website. So anyway, there you go. So what's to be done about this? Okay, we've looked at the evil guy doing this. We've looked at deceiving the player in order to deceive the sponsor, deceiving the sponsor directly in order to manipulate the decision-making process. Okay. Again, peer review board. Okay. In what area of science do you get away with running experiments for years, decades, involving vast amounts of money without a peer review board? You don't. So let's belly up to this and think about it. And I don't want to hear, oh gosh, Stephen, that's kind of expensive. Really? You think getting a major acquisition of a replacement submarine or aircraft carrier wrong isn't expensive? You know, get real. There's this phrase, you show me your checkbook and I'll tell you what's important to you. So if you're going to tell me, no, we can't afford the extra week to do the game peer review board, I'm going to tell you, if you don't actually care about the outcome of this game, and frankly, why should the war game organization therefore do it? Other than, I want to get paid and I like doing war games. I mean, okay, fine. Player stress. Monitor player stress. Is something going on in the game that artificially increases or reduces player stress for any reason other than playability? That's when the red flag goes up. Watch out for the sponsor. Watch out for contradictions between what the sponsor says and the action officers say. When, as I have done, you've got them both in the room with you, in front of your own boss, and they flatly contradict each other several weeks into design. Oh, that's a wonderful part of the kind of wargaming I play. Okay? Punish and learn from cheating. Okay? You've got to spot the cheaters. It could be just that it's a design flaw and they've spotted it. Fine, block that off. If it's deliberate, malignant cheating, because the guy's been planted by the sponsor, okay, you have to have someone in the game execution whose job is to spot that kind of thing, and he's out. Game information flow to the level of games war. If it's an operational level game and there's a flood of tactical information flowing around, it could just be incompetence, but I'm assuming that you're a competent game designer. Someone somewhere is engaging in deceptive practice, okay? We've already covered ambiguous game rules or process. I've been given the red card. Yeah, so the top one, the game peer review board, is highly important and hard to do. The bottom one, rotate the player roles if you can. This is not a simulation of how that staff will perform. This is a game that's meant to inquire into and inform the decision-making process about something. Nothing to stop you. Keep rotating the roles around. It breaks that initial picture that I'm now going to hang on to no matter what information comes in. Makes it very hard to do that. Bing, I think I'm within my 23 minutes of the 20 I was given.